There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, live local talk over the hour. Coming up, the man who was part of that group of Republicans that stormed the SCIF there in the House, the secure meeting room where the House Intelligence Committee has been conducting their impeachment proceedings. One of those members that made the move between, I don't know, 20 or 30. The number keeps bouncing around. So somewhere between 20 or 30 was AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne. He'll join us coming up at 1:30. Also, Attorney General of the state of Alabama, Steve Marshall, joins us in just a second. And right now, leadoff batter, our buddy Angelo at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Hey, man.
Hey, how's it going today?
It's good. We're always talking about coming in and buying things, which I love because y'all got lots of stuff to buy. But what about selling things? Are y'all buying precious metals right now? What are you buying?
Pretty much any of the stuff you see in the shop. If you've got gold or silver jewelry, maybe some nice designer sterling silver pieces, or even some gold or silver bullion, old Confederate notes, U.S. money, we're buying all of those types of items right now. As a matter of fact, this morning we were just buying a bunch of gold jewelry, a bunch of sterling silver jewelry, and a lot of bullion as well. So gold prices and silver prices are up from where they were just a few months ago. So if you've had some stuff you've been sitting on a while waiting for the prices to come up, this might be your time to go cash in real quick.
All right. So talk about when we come in. I mean, we just come in and just walk up to the main counter there and say, hey, we got some stuff to sell, or what do we do?
Sure. I mean, normally what we tell people is if it's a file box worth of stuff or less, just come on in. There's no need to make an appointment or anything. If you feel that desire or that need to make an appointment, it makes you feel better, go out to our website, log into the calendar there and set up an appointment. Now, if you've got a large amount of stuff, you're talking file boxes worth of stuff, you filled the back seat of your pickup, something like that, we definitely want you to give us a call. But generally speaking, we can get you in and out in just a few minutes.
All right, great stuff. Give people directions to come see you.
Yeah, we're in Midtown, 2204 Government Street. And like I said, you can always check us out online at mobilebaycoins.com. Or if you want to see some of this stuff we've been buying, go to our Facebook page and like and follow us there.
All right, and remind folks, too, some of the 45 hours a week of live local programming that happens here at FM Talk 106.5, that's you on Tuesday evenings.
It certainly is, yeah. They can check us out, obviously, with you Tuesdays from 8 to 9, and also Sundays from 9 to 10, or they can go onto the website and download it as a podcast.
Good deal. Angelo, we'll be seeing you soon.
Have a good one, buddy.
All right, you too. Angelo checking in from Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. By the way, congratulations to Lisa Dixon from Summerdale. She picked up those armbands to get down in front for Marshall Tucker. That show coming up Sunday at the Greater Gulf State Fair. Good stuff. More chances to win those armbands for Marshall Tucker coming up right here on Midday Mobile and that other show, Mobile Mornings. Coming right back, Attorney General of the State of Alabama, Steve Marshall, joins us right here on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Let's get right back to it. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile online at fmtalk1065.com. Also check us out Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, where we got some pictures up there, right? And also details on our latest contest, our Go Play Outside contest. Check them out online right now. I'm back on the show. Good to talk to Alabama Attorney General Steve Marshall.
Hey, Sean. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. And lots to talk about here with you. So I want to dive right into, first of all, this weekend, it's National Drug Take Back Day.
It is, and that's a big day. And Sean, I tell you, before we jump into that, I would at least like to acknowledge, as we all do, the events in Birmingham and the tragic death of a little Camille McKinney. I think that's captured the hearts of many. I do know that there was much effort put by law enforcement into hopefully bringing her home safely. That didn't happen. And so now the focus will be making sure that we hold those offenders accountable. But thank you for that.
Well, I want to come back to that. I want to come back to that in a little bit, because I had a question written down about that, but we'll get to that in a little bit, because there's a lot of people that are looking. I mean, obviously, this is resonating with people even outside Alabama.
Sure.
But there's so many of us that parents or even non-parents that go, "Oh my gosh, what if that happened? You know, how can you lessen the chance of something like that happening?" And I want to run through that with you.
We'll do it. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, National Drug Take Back Day coming up this weekend. If somebody has not heard about this, what is this?
You know, it's a national effort led by DEA, but supported by local law enforcement, and that is to give individuals an opportunity to be able to turn in a very safe way any leftover medications that they have in their home for safe disposal. And it's really kind of twofold. There's an environmental aspect to it. We don't want you flushing drugs down the toilet and then potentially causing contamination there. But more importantly, it's a prevention effort, so that if we talk about being able to, particularly for young people, to remove their potential access to opioids, benzodiazepines, or other controlled substances, is not necessarily going to be from a local drug dealer. It's probably going to be in the medicine closet in somebody's home. And so, you know, this is an opportunity that, you know, if you've had that surgery and had a prescription or have medication that you haven't used, it's a way of disposing that when you don't need it anymore, and take away that potential opportunity for kids to have access in a way that they don't need it.
Yeah, well, it's important, obviously, to get things like opioids off the street, but even if it's not, it could be any prescription medicine somebody has sitting around, even if it's not any kind of danger like that. I mean, but we don't want them flushing it. Heck, we have those stories where they'll get water samples back that have all these different,
right,
these chemicals in them, stuff from pills out there showing up in water table.
Absolutely, and we've seen tremendous response in Alabama. I think in the roughly almost 10 years now we've been doing this, collected almost 80,000 pounds of controlled substances that people have turned in. So it's a good program for everybody, and again, it's an opportunity to not only do the right thing, but to also do it right from an environmental side as well.
How do they find somewhere to drop off those pills?
On the DEA website, there's an opportunity to be able to search local communities, and right now I think we have almost 75 sites listed throughout Alabama, and I know there'll be several down in Mobile and Baldwin counties.
All right. As you mentioned opioids, of course, and something you and I have talked about so many times and so personal. Where are we in Alabama with the litigation? We've been talking in a national sense and on this show quite a bit about Purdue Pharma and their settlement deal and bankruptcy. How does that apply to Alabama? Explain what this means for Alabama.
Right now, we have a case pending in the Circuit Court of Montgomery where Purdue Pharma is one of our defendants. And then by the filing of that bankruptcy petition, basically that in and of itself shut down the ability to pursue, at this point, the claim against Purdue Pharma in state court and removes it to bankruptcy court in New York. Now, we are a part of, I think it is 26 states that has a framework for settlement going forward with Purdue Pharma through the bankruptcy. I think there are many issues still to be decided, one of which includes the allocation of money across the various states. And that's one that I continue to talk to my colleagues about. Alabama's a state that has been significantly impacted by this issue, and I think the data shows that. And one of the things that we want to do is to clearly make sure that my colleagues understand that Alabama needs to get its fair share of any recovery, and then we need to use that money directly for that plan that we put together about now 2 years ago that I think you and I have talked about on a few occasions that really is targeted to try to deal with that issue in the state of Alabama.
Yeah, okay. So if people probably don't know about that, so with the 20-some-odd states, there's a finite amount in the settlement, and of course every state is jockeying for the most amount. So I mean, when you go in, you make that case, you say, hey, let's look at the stats here. I mean, Lord knows there's been so many bad stats for the number of cases of opioid deaths and addiction in our state. Do you do like a, hey, per capita, we have this many people, we have this kind of, do you make that kind of argument for the money, or what do you do?
Yeah, I think, Sean, you've hit the nail on the head, especially for us, is that, you know, we like to refer to it as an intensity model, that, you know, many times when you have kind of larger pieces of consumer litigation, their settlements, population is the driver of how those dollars are allocated among the states. This is one that I don't think that's an appropriate measure, and that is because, you know, we've seen, for example, that Alabama's number one per capita in opioid prescriptions. We're in the top five in per capita diagnosis for opioid use disorder. You know, and those show that maybe compared to some of our larger states, Alabama's impacted far more harshly in dealing with this problem. The one statistic that I will tell you that is a little bit misleading and it lessens what is the problem is that we don't do a very good job in this state of identifying overdose deaths, and particularly overdose deaths related to opioids. And when I talk to some of my colleagues, that is data that they bring up. And one thing that is a disadvantage for us is because of our coroner system, that means that we don't always keep as accurate statistics as we could otherwise. And so that is, again, a part of the dispute that exists among the states. And then the other thing that is here is not only do you have allocation of money to the states, but also there are local and municipal cases as well,
right,
in which some of the funds will go to. So it is occupying a great deal of my time for appropriate reasons. You know, not only that, but you've seen reported nationally some discussion among distributors. Those are the McKesson's and the AmerisourceBergen's and the Cardinal Health's that likewise are attempting to resolve globally these cases. And from my perspective, we're going to do what's right for Alabama. If it makes sense to be a part of a settlement, then we'll proceed. But we have our opportunity to make our claims in Circuit Court in Montgomery, and we'll do that if need be.
Yeah, because that's interesting. I want to get to that. But I'm going to go back to something you said a second ago, if you can help clarify. You said the issue with overdose deaths in Alabama and the way – is it that coroners are they not saying that that's an overdose, or are they not sharing that information with a state database, or what's the problem there?
You know, really, I think on an overdose death, what you got to have is some medical information to confirm that being the cause of death. So that, for example, are we drawing blood at the scene, and is that being sent to toxicology with the Department of Forensic Science or somebody else to give a medical opinion on cause and manner of death? And so many times, we will just simply have uncertain or unknown as it's filled out on the death certificate. And frankly, it's a matter of resources, I think, from the coroner's perspective. And so some states have a medical examiner, and all unattended deaths are presented to that medical examiner. We just simply don't do that in Alabama. And the other thing is that many families don't want that showing up on a death certificate. And I guess I can understand that.
Yeah.
And that's another reason why we underreport that number.
All right. You mentioned the settlement thing and whether we'll go that way. And that's been a discussion piece. I know that, you know, not just you, but attorneys general from across the country are looking at that. I mean, what's the, I hate to use this terminology, but I guess what's the best deal for Alabama?
It's a great question, because that's exactly what we are evaluating. And I think there's a couple of issues that come into play there. You know, number one is going to be, is Alabama treated fairly as it relates to the allocation among the states, so that, you know, regardless of what this number may be, the real issue for me is how much of that makes its way into Alabama for use to deal with this particular problem. And so, yeah, you may have a very large number, but if most of that number is going to California, New York, and Texas, then that didn't do Alabamians a lot of good. And so, you know, my job is not only to be that advocate as it relates to those who we believe have violated the law, but also among my colleagues to say, you know, this is right for my state and this is something that we'll participate in. And so I think that is very much part of the discussion going on. We'll see where that goes. But for me, it really is sort of where the rubber meets the road on what we can do and whether or not settlement matters. Because certainty is always a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've learned that through my years, both as a prosecutor and in civil practice. But it's got to be a fair settlement and equitable to the people of Alabama to work.
Now, we're talking to Attorney General of the State of Alabama, Steve Marshall. What if, and we don't know the outcome, but let's say, for example, Alabama took this settlement, the state took this, does that have any, you mentioned municipalities, there are other groups involved in this, does that affect anybody else who's not part of the settlement of bringing their own suit? How does one mean anything to the other?
Yeah, it definitely does. You know, if you're in the shoes of a defendant, you're trying to basically, through the settlement, wrap up kind of all your potential liability. And so there is, in Cleveland, Ohio, what's known as an MDL, or multi-district litigation, that includes all of the city's municipalities and many hospitals. And so the effort would be through that case, along with all states' attorneys general, to be able to obtain releases of any future claims similar to this. And so I think that is, again, part of the discussion. The cities and counties are evaluating, just as we are, what this means. But, you know, the one thing, again, Sean, I would also mention is that this litigation, although it's important for Alabama, this is not our strategy to deal with the opioid addiction. And so that's why the plan that we put together is important. It's why it's good to know that, you know, our opioid prescriptions are down 23% from where we were 5 years ago, and the doctors and pharmacists have more information in their hands, and we're seeing greater use of medical-assisted treatment be a part of the equation. And so all this works together to ultimately save lives, and that's again, the focus.
All right. I want to go back to something we started off our discussion with, and I think about the situation that has taken place since the kidnapping of Camille McKinney and the systems we have in place in the state. Now, as a broadcaster, we carry Amber Alerts, right? Automatic Amber Alerts. Those went out on the radio station like they do on people's smartphones, and I'm for that. I'm a big supporter of that. But in your time as a prosecutor, your time as the Attorney General, is there anything else we can do? Or is it just the fact that there's evil in this world? And I mean, parents, not just, like I said, not just parents. I think just people out there are going, what in the heck can you do in a situation like this?
Yeah, and I think you've hit the nail on the head, is that I think the systems are in place to do everything that we can to identify a child that's been abducted and what it is we can do to bring that child home safely. But the reality is, and I think we'll learn more about the Birmingham matter soon, that they're just simply evil in this world and people that do bad things. Now, the unusual aspect that if the facts reveal that these are two third parties that abducted this child, that's frankly pretty rare, and that's a good thing. And it, rarely do we see a child taken that otherwise isn't connected to a family member or some other purpose. But yet, it still is that reminder, not only for parents to be able to, you know, have close observation on children when they are in public places, but we cannot forget that, you know, in situations where my age group was growing up, where our parents' advice was, you know, don't take candy from a stranger and don't talk to somebody that you don't know, you know, now as a result of the internet, we give individuals, third parties, direct access to our children. And so we need to make sure that we're vigilant in teaching kids about where they go online, what they're doing with gaming systems, and who it is that they're communicating with, and what type of information, personal or otherwise, they give out about who they are, where they live, and what their interests may be.
Yeah, you know, looking at this, I know that Chief Smith up there had said at one point, I don't know if it's changed, but they had already made the arrest of at that point, I guess, persons of interest. But then he had mentioned others. Is there anything you can talk about from your office? Are there others involved in this? Does it span beyond the two?
Yeah, I don't need to comment this point on the remainder of this investigation, but I can tell you this. I do know that not only Birmingham Police Department, but also many state and federal partners that worked with them have been exhaustive in every lead and will try to identify anybody that was involved in this young lady's death.
All right. To pivot once again, I know that you went to Mexico recently, and you were, what were you doing in Mexico? I mean, it had to do with the meth that ends up coming, heck, it comes through I-10 to 65 here in Mobile.
It does. You know, had a really good opportunity. This had been about 3 weeks ago to go with Rich Moore and our other two U.S. attorneys, along with DEA, to do really two things, one of which is to meet directly with the Mexican Attorney General, and for me to be able to tell him that an unsecured border is impacting Alabama. And I shared with him the stories, for example, of the 13-year-old girl in Huntsville who was beheaded by the cartel after she watched her grandmother die, or to share with him the fact that a majority of the controlled substances, meth, heroin, others, that we see in Alabama is supplied by basically the Sinaloa cartel or some of the other cartels in Mexico. And then we met with some very valiant law enforcement and military in the state of Sinaloa, who is recently, as last week, were in an outright battle for the capital city there because the military had arrested Chapo Guzman's son. And it is no doubt that they continue to fight corruption in not only the law enforcement ranks but the political ranks because of the influence of the cartel. But we had a chance to go to a meth lab that they had just seized that was producing 3 tons of pure meth a month. Now that is about a $240 million profit that we're talking about there. And that is, again, something that's making its way in Alabama, because as much as we talk about the opioid issue and heroin and fentanyl, crystal meth remains the number one drug problem in Alabama. And so a good visit to be able to share, frankly, an opportunity for me to be able to say thank you to some of the ones that were risking their lives, because I think it was important for them to know that what they're doing directly in Mexico is also working its way to keep Alabama safer as well.
I don't know if enough people have watched that as of late. I mean, essentially, there's the cartel has enough power, it's waging a civil war of sorts against the Mexican government.
I would encourage anybody to read the reports of last week where the cartel, armed with their forces, came in and basically shut down the capital city of Sinaloa, basically the equivalent of the cartel if they were in Alabama shutting down Montgomery, and demanding and obtaining from the president of Mexico the release of Chapo Guzman's son, who was wanted on an outstanding warrant. And again, when you see that type of influence, when you see that type of corruption, there's not a reason of mine where I don't see why we're fighting two battles, one here in this country, but also we're fighting to try to preserve what we can in Mexico to make them do their job to be able to keep us, again, safe, not only through the border, but the work that they're doing against criminal enterprises.
All right, just 1 minute left, but you know, one of my favorite subjects to talk to you about, the state's census lawsuit. Where does it stand?
We are, we survived our first legal hurdle, and that's a motion dismissed filed by many of the intervening states, and now, although it's not in the news, we're actively engaged in discovery with experts and sharing information. Sean, one thing that's probably happened since the last time that we talked is that I think it's around 13 states asked the judge to intervene, and he let them to argue against us. And so that tells me that maybe we're making some headway right there, is that left-leaning states are coming in to try to make an argument that we're not right. And again, for those of you that hadn't followed it, this is our opportunity to try to preserve one of our congressional seats that otherwise we'll lose if this country counts those who are in this country unlawfully, and I'm not willing to allow Alabama's congressional seat and its vote on the Electoral College to go to California, who embraces sanctuary cities and won't enforce the immigration laws, and we are hopeful of a very positive ruling from Judge Proctor in Birmingham. Also hopeful that the Department of Justice will ultimately recognize the validity of our claims.
Yeah, we'll have to get you back very soon to talk about that in depth. Attorney General Steve Marshall, thank you for your time. Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, y'all. Look forward to talking to you again.
All right. Steve Marshall joining us right here on Midday Mobile. Coming right back. We heard the audio from him last hour. AO1's Congressman Bradley Byrne, part of the crew that stormed the skiff. Talk about that next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. So we were talking about Congressman Bradley Byrne in the first hour, listening to some of the audio recorded right after the storming of the skiff with Captain Adam Schiff, or something like that. The man himself joins us right now, AO1's Congressman Bradley Byrne, live from Washington, just off the floor of the House and making some time for us. Thank you.
Yes, Sean, good to be with you. Interesting day.
Just understatement alert. Interesting. Talk about, so I mean, so many of us now have watched your comments from right after. Explain to folks what, first of all, I guess, let's go back. What is the skiff? Where is that in the House? How did y'all assemble? How'd the whole thing go down?
A skiff is a room where we can get classified information. It has certain protections on it so that people cannot eavesdrop on whatever's being told to us. We have some in the House office buildings. This particular one is actually in what's called the Convention, Capitol Visitor Center, and it's the one that's used by the House Intelligence Committee. And that's where Adam Schiff has been holding these so-called hearings that have been going on for a couple of weeks now. The irony is that I'm being told by our members, Republican members in that room, that they've not been getting anything classified. In fact, they're being told at the beginning of every deposition, there's no classified information here. So why it has to be in a closed room in a SCIF and the rest of us can't be there, beyond me. But we, about 30 or 40 of us on a press conference to demand that we get to be in that room, and we walk from the press conference into the ante room outside of where this meeting room is, and we demanded to go in, and they've sent a staffer out. She says, I can't let you in. And I said, on what authority? She says, I'm just a staffer here. I'm just telling you what they told me. And I said, well, if you can't tell me authority, we are going in. And we went in. And when we went in, we just lined the room, you know, the walls, and lined the room. And the Democrats obviously were completely dumbfounded. Adam Schiff looked like he did not know what to do. He didn't know what to do. And then at one point, he just got up and walked out. And I said, do not leave. And he just walked right past me. And that's when some of the Democratic members started questioning why we were there, and we answered them, and we were very blunt in our answers. And this is ridiculous. There is no process here. There are no rules here. They tell our guys that they can't tell anybody what happens in the proceeding outside the room, and then they selectively leak everything. This is what the English people would know what this is. This is the Star Chamber. This is where the government, without any due process, without anything to protect the innocent, just goes out there and uses its power to try to club people. And enough is enough.
Yeah, okay, so this is helping people understand this, because when we were talking about it last hour, I was getting texts. So the Intelligence Committee, there are, of course, Republicans, a minority in the House, and so a minority in that committee. There are Republicans in there, but they are not allowed to talk about the proceedings. Is that correct?
So, yeah, they can't tell me the substance of anybody's testimony. None. They can't even say anything about their testimony.
But Democrats
you read about it in the press, because the Democrats leak it to the press, or they leak what they want to the press.
So, okay. So, and you also pointed out something in your comments after that happened, that you were being blocked, and specifically you took umbrage because you had the assistant secretary testimony going on there, defense sec testimony going on, and you're on the Armed Services Committee, so you should have standing in that room, even if this was a real thing.
Absolutely. I mean, the Intelligence Committee does not have jurisdiction in the House over the Department of Defense. House Armed Services Committee does. That's the committee I sit on. And there were five Republicans in that room who were members of the Armed Services Committee. And of all people who should have been in that room, it should have been us. But they were trying to keep us out. Now, I think they've adjourned for at least some period of time today, maybe for the entire day. So I don't know what the next move is. But if nothing else, we've called attention to the people of America about the sham proceeding that's going on here. Look, if they would adopt a resolution for the House that said, we're going to do an impeachment inquiry, here's the process, here are the rules, and the rules were fair, then I wouldn't have any standing to be upset. And they've laid it out. Instead, they don't have any rules. They just make it up as they go along, and they treat people horribly. And it's enough. It's time to put an end to this.
Now, okay, so y'all do this today, but, you know, I heard comments y'all stood up today, but you need more people. I heard the, you know, comment that you need more people to stand with y'all.
Yes.
More Republicans, I mean, that's towards other Republicans.
But beyond that, Sean, it's time for the people of America to stand up and say enough. Now, we are, the members of the House, we are the representatives of the people of America, so we should never have been treated the way we've been treated the last several weeks. But the American people have got to start talking to their congressmen and saying, you cannot keep doing this way. If they've got some facts to show that there's an impeachable offense by this president, then put it out in public. Let everybody see it. That's what they did to Nixon. That's what they did to Clinton. They're not going to do that with Donald Trump. They're going to try impeaching behind closed doors. No, this is not the Soviet Union. This is not the People's Republic of China. We don't act that way here.
And so the word is, I mean, you just said it, that the talking to those Republican members, there's nothing that is there's nothing that meets the measure of the Intelligence Committee and classified information.
No classified information.
I mean, so it seems simple. Then why is it not in judiciary? Why is it not somewhere else?
Because they can't hide it that way. They can at least make this little argument, well, it's an Intelligence Committee, and we always do our meetings this way. Well, that's why they stuck it in intelligence, because usually these committees, these impeachment proceedings go through the judiciary. They're trying to hide this. They are doing this behind closed doors because they don't want the public to see it. That's what's really going on here. And I'm not going to be lectured by Adam Schiff and the other Democrats on that committee. I'm not going to be lectured by them.
Well, it sounds like you said that today to Adam Schiff, and obviously he didn't like it. There's a call for an ethics complaint against you?
Yeah, a call for ethics complaint against every one of us that walked in that room. And you know what I've got to say? Bring it on.
But no, he would bring that. That's something you would face him for the House. How does that work?
It's like any other. We have ethics rules in the House. File a complaint against it, and it goes to our ethics committee. The ethics committee has to vote on it. I don't think it's unethical for a member of the House of Representatives to walk into a hearing room when their proceeding is involving something as big as impeachment, and when the witness is somebody that's within the jurisdiction of the committee he sits on. But tell them to bring the ethics complaint. I'm serious. This is, the American people need to see this for what it is.
You know, I wonder, I mean, the idea of the politics of this, and driven by politics, is it just strategically, why wouldn't, if the Democrats had something damning, I'm just saying this just because I don't know anything, Lord knows, I'm not allowed in that room. If they had something damning, wouldn't they want that testimony about the president in front of cameras? Wouldn't they want that getting out to the American people if they had this smoking gun?
Well, of course they would. And they know they don't have it, so what they're trying to do is this little show. And the show is, well, we won't let anybody else talk about it. Then we'll selectively leak this little piece and this little piece and hope that we can color the argument or get people thinking in one direction with the help of the national news media. When in point of fact, what we're hearing from our members in there is that if you see the entirety of what's being said in those rooms, it's not the way the Democrats are portraying it at all. Now, one of the press people said, well, Mr. Schiff says he's going to let y'all see the transcripts later. And I said, I want to see him now. I don't hear later. Because they're selectively leaking stuff that's in those transcripts to the press now. So
right.
It's time for him to put up or shut up.
Yeah, and we know how that works. I mean, if you know, a newspaper has an incorrect headline that comes out and then they run a retraction, it's probably 10% of the people ever see the retraction, you know?
Right. They want to get everybody thinking, you know, to sort of color everything this way. And then when the facts come out, you know, they've already poisoned the well. No, that's not the way this is going to work. And I'm not alone here. There are plenty of other Republican House members that were in that room with me, and more coming, I think. So this is really dividing the House right now in a serious way. And it's time for Adam Schiff and them to stop. Come back to the House, get a resolution, lay out the process, lay out the rules, make sure the rules are fair, and then follow that process and do it in public. Let everybody see it.
Wait a second. You said more to join. Congressman Byrne, if there are more Republican members, will y'all do this again?
Well, I'm not in a position to say exactly what we're going to do next, this ain't over.
Y'all would say, if it would move to another committee that was not in the SCIF, that was open, an open committee, at that point, that's what y'all want to have happen, right? That you and the other Republicans went in there today. If it moves to where anybody, any member of Congress can go in there, then you're good with it.
Yeah, I'm not asking to be somebody that gets to ask questions. I haven't even asked for that. I just want to hear and see the witnesses for myself so that I can make up my own mind. I don't need Adam Schiff to tell me what they say. I want to hear what they say. And if they would do it in such a way to where the president could have somebody present to ask questions, where Republicans could subpoena their own witnesses, which we've always done in the past, yeah, if they had a process like that, I wouldn't have a reason to be upset. But the fact that they're doing it this way tells you that they don't have a good case. And they're just trying to use this stupid process to poison the well, and I'm just not going to stand by and let them do it.
You know, I was asking you about this back in September when I was up in Washington and you were on the show, and I said, how long does this last? What is the timeline on this for the Democrats and this impeachment inquiry? And we had bounced around some different times. What do you think now? Is this a Thanksgiving thing? Is this a 2020 thing? Do you have any sense of this?
I don't, because they don't. Mm-hmm. They're making this up as they go along. Now, they had something out there that was like, do it before Thanksgiving. But when we leave next week, we don't come back until the day after Veterans Day, which is November the Veterans Day is November the 11th. We don't come back to November the 12th. We have 2 weeks at that point before Thanksgiving. They don't have time to get this done by Thanksgiving. I think they're beginning to learn that they've got this thing all fuzzed up and they can't figure out how to unfuzz it. But they, you know, they're the ones calling the shots, not us.
All right. Well, we'll watch and see if that snowball begins to grow off what y'all did today. And I know you can't talk about the playbook, but there'll be a bunch of us watching for what's next, and hopefully what's next, to be honest with you, just to take the punditry out of it, what I'd like to see next is some open testimony, so we the let alone our representatives, but we the American people can see what's going on.
Absolutely. And remember, we did this with Clinton, we did this with Nixon. Sean, I was a student intern in Washington in the summer of 1973. They had the Senate Watergate hearings over in a big hearing room in the Senate office building with television cameras all over the place. And people like John Dean and John Ehrlich and all of them came and testified, and everybody in America got to see it. Why can't we do that in this particular case? Because the Democrats don't have a case.
I don't know how they can argue right now against that, because they're not showing that they do. Yeah, I mean, just this is a hayseed, you know, my hayseed view of things, but if you had a case, you had that damning info, wouldn't you love nothing more than to have the cameras on it rolling and have that getting out to the American people? If you were trying to get the president impeached, I would want that testimony in front of the people.
Absolutely. I don't think that's hayseed at all. I think it's common sense, which is something that's sadly lacking in this building right now.
That's for sure, but it's been, once again, a heck of a day already on Capitol Hill. Congressman Byrne, thank you for your time, and please keep us in the loop. People can probably get more of this on your Twitter feed as well.
They can, and you can follow me either on my official site or on my campaign site. But this is one of those things that may develop literally hour by hour, and if it does, good.
There we go. We'll be watching it and checking back with you very, very soon. Thanks for your time.
All right, good to be with you.
All right, AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne, one of the crew that stormed the skiff, captained by Adam Schiff. I don't know, there's some kind of rhyme in there. Somebody will put something together. And that snowball would grow? What might that mean next? We'll hear from you when we get back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, and upload. There it goes. The interview that just wrapped up with Congressman Byrne about storming the skiff today. By the way, that podcast, you get podcasts of all the different live local shows we do here at FM Talk 106.5. We told you before, you can go, if you want to get them a la carte, you go to the website, fmtalk1065.com. You'll see a tab there that says podcast. You click it and find the show, find the day, or the specific interview like that one that'll be not for the whole hour. It'll be specific to a discussion I had with somebody. That'll be up, and you can click those. You can listen to them. You can share them as well with others. Also, if you subscribe for our podcast, which I'd love for you to do, at iTunes for Apple users or Stitcher for Android users. Also, you can get our podcast through Spotify. If you get music, you do that Spotify thing. Our podcasts are on there as well, so make sure to add us on Spotify. And TuneIn Radio, which is one of the apps that lets you listen to us on your smartphone. TuneIn Radio and Simple Radio, two great and free apps where you can stream the station. But the TuneIn Radio app has a podcast feature as well for us. So a lot of places to get our podcast. Go on there and check them out. But the subscription way is the best. Then you'll have to think about it. It just gets delivered to your smartphone. And we do ask one thing here. As you enjoy the podcast, and thank you, y'all. Thank you. Thank you. Y'all are great. There's a lot of you that check out our podcast, and it's awesome. It's awesome. Thank you. But as you do that and you listen to one maybe on, you know, on one of those platforms like Stitcher or iTunes or somewhere else, give us whatever it is, stars or bananas or thumbs up or however you different things have different ranking, you know, way how you rank a podcast. Give us a ranking or a comment there. We appreciate that as well. So thank you in advance for that. But that podcast is waiting for you. Plus, we'll get the podcast loaded for a discussion with Attorney General Steve Marshall. That will be up as well later. And you can go all those places. And also, if you're on Twitter, you're one of our Twitter followers, you follow me at FM Talk 106.5. Add this one to the mix, at FM Talk Pods. Because Lord knows we couldn't type out podcast. That was Dalton, who's a lot cooler, set that up. So FM Talk Pods on Twitter, at FM Talk Pods. And you can also follow that, and it'll tell you when we upload each podcast. It'll pop up in your feed, and you can say, okay, I want to click on that, listen to that. So you can check it out there. All right, a couple of texts here. A lot of y'all saying well, I missed that because I was busy talking. A lot of y'all saying thank you to Congressman Byrne for doing what he did. Well, y'all can hit him up on Twitter or something. I didn't get a chance to say thank you. That's y'all's job. Y'all go tell him thank you if you liked what he did today. who said this? Unnamed. I was wondering if they were. Now, that is some 007 stuff. I'm wondering if they were in the, when they were in the room, if they thought to plant a bug somewhere. They bugged the room. I think they probably sweep it for bugs. Steve says, won't there be impeachment hearings in the House if these inquiries find sufficient grounds for impeachment? They can move to a vote. There is some discussion period, Steve, but, you know, I've said this from the beginning, President Trump's going to get impeached. I mean, I can't imagine and listen, this is one of these things where politically, just the political part of it, that's why I question the Democrats, because the political part, I see where they're coming from. I may not like it, but I see where they're coming from. This is how the blood sport of politics is played these days in Washington. So I see them moving forward with it. What I don't get, though, if you want to look at the merit, I don't know what the case is. I don't know how good the testimony is for the Democrats, because if it was, wouldn't you just put your, you know, you might be a Republican or a conservative, but put yourself in the Democrat's shoes for a second. If you had really juicy stuff on the president testimony, wouldn't you want that played out every day in front of TV cameras? But they don't. And then what happens is it goes to the House. I mean, it goes from the House, goes to the Senate, and I don't think they vote to remove, even with Pierre Delecto and some other Republicans that will jump ship. I mean, ship. It won't go anywhere. So, but the process, yeah, I think it's fair. If they're running this process, they should do it in front of the cameras. All right. See y'all in the morning. Paul Feinbaum on the way next.